Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Logan Stanley, uncomfortable with promotion. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend, who puts the I-I-I in IPAI test, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Well, I certainly like that did one? I did some deep research on Friday night, for sure, but, you know, after the recent slate of games, I'm certainly spinning like a top. I feel a little inebriated, a little punch drunk, not sure how I'm seeing the world, because I've seen a lot, man.
For those listeners, when Vaughn gets overserved a tad, he gets punchy. just as a public service announcement, he gets a little punchy.
Not in a literal
I'm teasing
sense.
You, man. You're fine. No,
well, you can tease me, that's fine, but I don't want our many, many listeners to think that I get into a fight at the Jets game.
No, playful. That's the best word, playful.
Very playful. Yeah, want to give a shout-out as we start. Mike and I, as our Airport Lounge managers, got into our first Twitter beef in the last week. I'd like to give a shout out to our good friend Jay Mischkowski. But I had written an article for the Face Off Hockey Network site, speaking about Blake Wheeler and working very hard to cast him in a good light. Jay wasn't buying it and kind of was playfully coming at us on Twitter. So I didn't know what quite to think of it. I didn't know how serious Jay was. I didn't quite know how to handle a Twitter beef because I've never gotten into one before. So I don't know. What were your thoughts about our first Twitter beef, Mike?
I was the same way. I didn't know quite how to react, and I thought I came to your defense rather quickly. And again, the article itself, A, I thought was really good, and B,
thank you,
was putting his career in context because he has been a very productive Winnipeg Jet. And he is not at the moment and hasn't been for a couple years. But that basically, and excuse me for sort of recapitulating, but essentially it was, we need to do him better. Like, let's not end his career in this way where he's overmatched and overpaid. And I thought that was sort of the gist of it, but Jay didn't agree. So it was kind of nice to have our first Twitter bees at the Airport Lounge.
Yeah, that was kind of the concluding thoughts. I thought you summed it up really pretty well. And if you want to check it out on the Face Off Hockey Network site, I kind of take a look at his contracts and his production over the last decade, and try to put it in a context of how productive he's been relative to the other top producing forwards, and then what he's paid, because a lot is being made, and rightfully so, about how much he's getting paid this year. And it's tough to look at, a contract in a particular year and determine whether we're getting value for that particular year. It's fair to do that, don't get me wrong. But I think we've gotten great value from the production of Great Wheeler over the course of the past decade. And I kind of trace that out in the article. And somewhat unconvincingly, for some, I thought it was pretty factual. But hey,
that's Max. Why you can use facts to prove that's almost why anything.
Exactly. And that's why I've earned over $2 as a podcaster. I think my record speaks for itself.
Well, we've got a lot to get to. And normally we do a segment called the pre-boarding announcements. It's a bit of a summary of the past week or two in Jetsdom. We thought we'd try something a little different. We're going to go, we'll go a little shticky, and we're going to call this segment The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. So there
were we've had some of each of those things in the last 7 to 10 days,
right? And I've broken out. We had 6 games since our last podcast, and I've broken these out. Vaughn, I didn't share these with you, so if you disagree in the delineations, let me know. But I thought we'd start with the good. I had the Leafs game and the Devils game, and then the bad were the Arizona and Calgary games, And then the ugly were the Minnesota and Carolina games.
Oh, I think you have it spot on there. That's a dog's breakfast of fandom right there.
Well, I don't know how much time we'll spend on the ugly, because that was, you know, both of those games were a steaming pile of suck.
Yeah, Mo, that team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Homer, watch your mouth!
I gotta go. My damn wiener kids are listening.
So I'm pretty sure we can breeze through those. But let's start with good stuff. I thought we had in the pocket of those six games. I thought we played reasonably well. The stats back it up against the Leafs, which was a thrilling game and an exciting one. I've got more of that later on the podcast. Sort of ancillary to the game itself, and the Devils. What were your thoughts?
Well, having attended both of those games,
right?
Friday, in person IPA eye test Friday. It doesn't get any less scientific than that, I'll tell you. So, I was full of truth serum on Friday night, so I can't lie about what I saw. But what I did see, I enjoyed very much. Obviously. I thought the Jets skated well. They got contributions across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, and I think you can kind of lump the Toronto game in with this. I just think they were on. Okay, so, oh, wow. So such technical terms. Look, this is a team that's, kind of being driven by its shooting percentage at the moment, in that they seem to be consistently getting a fair number of opportunities, and some pucks are going in and some aren't. And it's not an excuse. I think good teams will get those more often than not, and we're fluctuating all over the place. And those happen to be two games where I thought that over and above, skating better or other tactics or better goaltending, whatever the case may be, we were probably getting some better chances. And they were going in for us. I think we scored 8 goals on the Friday night, 6 goals on the Sunday.
Pretty decent.
There's obviously going to be a little luck involved when those numbers get up that high. But I think it was a testament to the firepower the Jets should be showing on a more regular basis. And so maybe when we get to the bad and the ugly, we'll talk about more about what the problems are, but the problems that I think that we face at the current moment weren't obvious and weren't at
the
forefront of the game. They didn't manifest themselves in those two games. The Jets were doing what they were doing. They were creating good chances like they do most nights, Carolina aside, and the puck was going in for them. So it was a super fun night, and both nights were super fun. I rewatched the games because I taped the game, and I came home and I rewatched them.
Oh, you did? Good for you.
Yeah. And so you always pick up little things you didn't see at the game. But I don't know what to say other than they were shooting the puck and it went in. Because in many respects, again, the Carolina game aside, it didn't look very different than other games where the puck... Like, how was Friday night different than the Phoenix game? They were all, in fact, they might have played.
That was the point I had down here. Was it,
yeah,
it's much of the same.
Yeah, go ahead.
Much of the same. And we just put the puck in the net. So well said. Last year, all my axe diff talk, but we didn't have these wild fluctuations in shooting percentage. We were fairly consistent and fairly consistently really good at sniping. And I know you and I had talked probably a bit ad nauseum about some of that might not be sticky. It's not traditionally, no matter who you have on your team,
right?
It's not traditionally a sticky stat where your shooting percentage is in the top 5, top 10 of the league consistently. And we've seen that now. Like, I think we're in the bottom third of the league in terms of shooting percentage, and we have good games and bad games in that regard. And those two games just happen to be good games. The only other thing I wanted to mention about sort of the quote unquote good was I the Leafs game was obviously a lot went on. And what I did like was the moxie. We had our mojo back, it seemed like. And whether that was just a product of playing the Leafs or it was reactionary to some of the the side tomfoolery that was going on, and
yeah.
like Simmons, Vaughn and I were sitting beside each other, and he came out of the penalty box, and Vaughn noticed it right away. He's like, he's going right for him. He's going right for Morrissey. Like, it was a bit of an old school match, and it was awesome.
Very much.
But we didn't back down, and we gave more than we took, which is good to see. Again, this is old, very Don Cherry-esque cliche, but that's playoff hockey, and I'm glad to see we have some jam. It's just, you know, following that up with the performance in Carolina is obviously disappointing.
Yeah, we waited. But that was the only other point I wanted to make. Capitulate. I was going to say we waited till last night to capitulate. So, you know, I do think that you know, anytime you play Toronto, you kind of get up for it. You know, the eyes of the nation are going to be upon this game, so it naturally will add an extra element of, you know, excitement. They did play them each other a lot more last season than they typically do, so there's probably a little bit of you know, a holdover from the things that went on last year. So the Jets were certainly engaged, and one of the things that I'll raise about those two games was clearly the reemergence of Mark Scheifele. He took his game to another level and got on the score sheet like he should be doing. And we've talked about this previously on this podcast. With the continued success and scoring of Dubois and
Ehlers,
your boy, and Ehlers. Connor has you know, he's caught a case of the Wheelers, and he's cooled off a little bit. But
I'm getting a T-shirt set. It says case. I came down with a case of the Wheelers.
Got a case of the Wheelers. But if we can get those two guys really pushing, right, Scheifele and Dubois, then I think things are going to be really good for us. There are other weird things going on with this team, the huge fluctuation in the shooting percentage from night to night, that's hard to put a finger on how to fix those things, because our high danger chances are not bad. Our high danger shooting percentage is not good. But our, you know, just keep creating those chances and the goals will take care of themselves. I do think that's true. That's a longstanding thing, but very, just to wrap it up on those two games, strong games from our top players, and that's what you need if you want to be successful, is your best players being your best players, and that's what we saw on Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about the 55-81-26 line here coming up. So, the bad. Now, again, Arizona and Calgary, we got just completely different types of games, kind of a tale of two shitties. We in Arizona are expected.
I see what you did there.
Using my literary background.
Hang on, Voltaire.
The Arizona game, like, I'll just use expected goals. Our expected goals with Arizona was 73%, and then with Calgary was 36%. Like, I was at the Arizona game as well. We peppered them, but peppered them from not opportunistic spots. A lot of shots. Not a lot of great shots.
No.
Like, the high danger chances were 13-11 in our favor. And then against Calgary, it was 12-6 against. But two different games that I think are somewhat reflective of some of the issues that we're running into at the moment is that we're creating shots, but we're not creating great shots. We don't have a great net front presence. We're taking shots from a lot of different angles. And then there are times when we just get flat out outplayed for a period or periods concurrently. And I thought the Calgary game was an example of that. I just thought we didn't play very well at all. The score probably could have been worse.
Your overarching point is...
It still was a bad
correct
game.
In the sense that process is product in a lot of instances. And if your point is that game looked exactly like the Jets from the bad seasons, then you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
They were outplayed, out-hustled, outworked all over the ice for the vast majority of the game. And they relied on an elite level shooting percentage, okay, in that their shots and quality chances were few and far between throughout the course of the game. Okay, they were outshot in the game. They did not score on the power play. Okay, so Calgary really took the game to them, and they were just able to hammer home some goals. And I mean, it's very easy to recall that game in a negative way because they got down 2-0 so quickly, and it looked like this was going to be an extension. It looked like the Jets had just come out of a 5-game losing streak. It looked like they were going to pick up where they left off in that losing streak, and they kind of battled their way out of it, but not necessarily in a convincing way. They just had these 4 to 6 opportunities, and they happened to score on 4 of them. So very easy to remember that game, not in the fondest terms. Now, I'm far more open to being harsh on that game than the Arizona game. I agree with your sentiment that they weren't getting the A and A-plus chances against mm-hmm. Arizona, but I certainly thought they did enough. I really do. And I do, if you want to say, that might be an interesting game to highlight as an example, has there been a fundamental shift in the Jets' philosophy in terms of generating offense? Typically, they had been a very stingy team about shooting the puck, right? They wanted to work it into the high-danger area, and they weren't going to waste shots from the outside. Now, this year, you're seeing far more. Not simply just from the point, which was part of the problem last season. Too many pucks were coming in from the point, but now they're shooting from everywhere, high and low.
Yeah, along okay? the boards.
And that's really driving up our shot counts, and which is, in a way, feeding into these 5-on-5 totals that we're seeing to somehow give us somewhat of a different analytical perspective.
Yeah, much better than last year.
What might be actually happening, because the quality of those chances aren't. Now, we are getting into the high danger areas at a reasonable clip. It's our shooting percentage. So maybe we're on the outer edges of those areas, or we're not getting great wood on those shots. But
some subjectivity
I do think
those metrics too, yeah.
For sure. I do think we did enough against Arizona to win that game. I don't think that we weren't out hustled, we weren't out skated, we weren't out tacticked, we weren't out strategied. Maybe we were out tiny bit out goalied. I mean, your goalie gives up one goal. I mean, that's going to happen. We should have done better than score 0 goals. So I have less of, you know, a bad feeling about the Arizona game, even though we lost to probably the worst team in the NHL, 1-0, which is mind-boggling.
Well, okay, yeah. That's my caveat, is that maybe it's expectation-based, but they're terrible. Like,
oh, they are.
They're barely an NHL team, and I understand getting 45 shots is obviously commendable, but we didn't dominate that game in the way that, in my opinion, that if we are an elite NHL team, that you would and should. I see a lot of that. Well, we got 45 shots, so it's a moral victory. Well, there are no moral victories in my mind for these kind of things. And it struck me that during the game, there were large swaths of ice time that I didn't think we were dominating the way that we probably should, which was alarming to me.
Well, the confounding part is, if we simply flip 2 games, I don't think we're having a very different discussion. If we had lost to Toronto 1-0 and we had beat Arizona 8-4, you know, to us, and to the regular fan,
fair, good
because,
point.
Because we are irregular fans, we are podcasters. We are podcasters now. Then that would make a lot more sense, right? That just, people would say, okay, you score 8 goals against Arizona. Maybe it's not great you gave up 4, but you scored 8. You should be doing that. Oh, 1-0 loss to Toronto. That's mm-hmm. a tight checking game. Toronto's a really good team, and I still think they're a good team. But, quickly, going back to the Toronto game, there's a team, like, we beat them, but they were coming off a back-to-back where they had gone to overtime in a shootout. They were without their starting goalie, their second best forward.
Yeah,
They were tired, and we were rested. And so there's a little something to that, too. I think Toronto's a really good team. It's still a good win, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, we're just all over the map. I think, you know, we're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's a very fair conversation. But the toughest part about that is that within the span of 6 games, we had the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is a grand inconsistency there, and maybe I should be saving this for the wrap-up of these 3 sections, but there's a grand inconsistency there that, over and above whatever the outcomes are, should be very disconcerting to the Jets fan.
Yeah, and we've been schizophrenic all year, so to speak. And, you know, we might as well. That takes us to the ugly. And that was Minnesota and Carolina. Minnesota, I don't want to relive. If you've got some thoughts and feelings on it, that was just flat out. I think you called 6-0 after the first goal. And it was 6-0 after the second period. So your prognostications are as spot on as usual. The Carolina game is the one not...
about the Minnesota game, I just need to interject. I've once before in my life seen a beating like that. And it happened outside of Papa George's.
Who was the recipient of that beating?
That is our podcast now. We just tell inside jokes to one another and not explain them to the people listening. No, one unfortunate night many, 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 many moons ago. In fact, have we told this? We shouldn't tell the whole story, but very quick. Have we told the story of the podcast?
No, before? We haven't, no.
Okay, so...
my dad's going to be proud.
Yeah, Mike, myself and his brother were out, and we got into a little tete-a-tete with some guys. I did fine. your brother did okay. But at one point, we turned around to see... all of the other guys on top of Mike. But we saved him. He's here with us today.
Yeah,
He's a fully functioning human. But it took me back. It took me back to that time when, you know, there was three people standing over this person I knew smashing a newspaper.
Uptown magazines on me. It was an Uptown magazine rack. Yeah. I looked up and I'm like, why am I getting hit in the head with a rack? I was like, something's gone wrong here. Something's amiss.
Yes. So it reminded me of that, and we will talk about it no longer. We will just move on, and we'll talk about something else. And that Carolina game where the Jets decided, well, quickest team in the league. I'm not skating tonight. I don't know about you.
I don't know all conjecture, but I don't know if it was like latent hangover, but it was clear from the start that we didn't have our legs. And I'm going to give full props and kudos to Carolina. I haven't watched them play much hockey at all. Wow, they're good. They're fast. Their style is everything that I think you and I talk about and espouse on this podcast, right? Like time and space. The broadcast even mentioned it. Like even they were on the time and space angle. Their penalty kill. Why can't we just copy? Like it's the sincerest form of flattery. Just do that. I mean, we don't probably have all of the correct personnel to play that aggressively, especially if you've got Wheeler out there killing penalties. But it clicked right away where I was like, this team plays hard and they play tight and they play fast. All the things that we say all the things that we say as a team that we want to do, they actually do. It was quite impressive. And then conversely, it was also a bit alarming to see us get boat raced like that.
You hit on so many good points. Just to go through it real quickly, I almost enjoyed watching them, how well they played. I mean, unfortunately, it was against the team I cheer for, but it was impressive from stem to stern. You know, I was sitting there thinking, man, these guys are unbelievable with their sticks. And then Kevin Sawyer said it, and it's like, oh, now I can't say that on the podcast. Thanks, Kevin Sawyer. You're ruining this game for me on so many different levels. Anyway, but their sticks were good. Their gaps were incredible. And for me, what they were doing is they were doing a great job all over the ice of anticipating where the puck was going to go. So many times the Jets are reacting. They're just reacting. They don't think, it doesn't look to me that even though these lines have played together for a period of time, they're not anticipating where the guy's going to go, or they don't have a common understanding of how they're trying to break out of the zone or how they're trying to get into the zone way too often. Sometimes you see it and it's really clean and it's really nice, but far too often there seems to be a lack of chemistry or lack of understanding of where the other guy is going to be. So they end up, instead of being able to anticipate and be proactive, either getting out of their zone or attacking in the offensive zone, they're being reactive. Mm-hmm. So they're always a half a step behind, whereas Carolina looks a half a step ahead. They're diagnosing the play. They're off. And they're not thinking, where is the puck? Their thought is, where is the puck going next? And they understand how the opponent is aligned and positioned, and they're ready to step in and intercept the pass.
It's pretty.
Or to take the time and the space away from whoever received the pucks. It's very impressive. So, I mean, it was very... And the Jets weren't skating. They just... Even when they had open ice, they didn't... they weren't able to generate a lot of speed. You mentioned them, you know, having perhaps gone out and maybe they celebrated Wheeler's 1,000th game. I thought that maybe they took Logan Stanley words to heart and they went out and had some responsible fun or whatever the t-shirt says. But they did not look ready to play. And then it's, I don't know how long we're into the podcast, but we're going to say those two words that we always get to. You know, Paul Maurice comes out of the media and says, well, they weren't ready to play, that's on me. And he gives that crap twice a year. And it's like he comes into each season with two of those cards. And he's going to play
them. Trump cards there, yeah.
He's got a couple trump cards, and he knows that if he just drops them a couple times during the season, the hard questions won't be asked. Okay, about why they weren't ready to play. I don't know how they're not ready to play the fastest and quickest team in the NHL. Like, it's a home game. You have people that are shelling out. Like, and this is, sorry, I said I wouldn't do that. I just threw something on the table. I know you can. Anyways, here's the thing. All right, so I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here.
I'm just getting warmed up.
You're playing the quickest, fastest team in the league. So your tactical adjustment is to elevate a slow-footed defender to the second pair, and then to bring in an even slower defender to play on the third pair. Like, if you saw Beaulieu on that, playing the penalty kill, he's just lying on the ice there for 3 seconds while they score. Unbelievable. Anyways, so we got slower. From the Toronto game to the Carolina game, we got slower on defense. And then you don't get them up to play that game, and you're putting Stanley on the right side. You're literally experimenting. That training camp is over. Experimenting is over. Yeah. You're playing in front of your home crowd. Thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars have been spent on from your fan base to attend this game. Go try that in Seattle when all we're doing is watching it on TV. Go try that in Vancouver.
Yeah.
When all we're doing is watching it on TV. Put your best lineup on the ice at home because people are paying money. That isn't the time to experiment. You know, 50,000 people shell out hundreds of dollars to watch you experiment so that you maybe have, maybe in the playoffs, you know, no, that's not the time to experiment. I was really disappointed, more so than usual. Flew in the face of any type of, you know, it just seemed to me this is, again, a guy that's just saying, I know more than everyone else, and I'm just playing a game where everyone, just seeing who's in and who's out. I'm just going to do that on a daily basis. Who's in and who's out? Who's against me?
Couldn't agree more. Everything you said, I'm 100,000% on board. I will put a cherry on top. The Wheeler-Shifley-Connor line is now a spectacular 36% expected goals adjusted in their reincarnation. A good number is 50%. 40% is, you know, it fluctuates game to game, so you want to look at over a larger sample size. But at the end of the day, that's just bad. And did you mention it at the game where we were getting peppered with shots? Where it's constant. They individually, I like the skill set that each of them have. Together, they're a defensive liability. So whatever 2 to 3 pretty plays that they have a game are far outweighed by the just defensive black hole that they've become and have been for years. And somehow, Maurice, who says that he has, that the Winnipeg Jets have advanced analytics people, but he's not 100% convinced that they represent a full picture of how to coach a hockey game. Well, maybe give that another thought, man. Your points, all of them correct. That's not even just a hockey thing. That's just a common sense. Like, don't take a third line defenseman and for the first time against one of the best teams in the NHL, promote him, but put him on the wrong wing. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway,
that team. If you do it against Arizona or another bottom feeding team like a Seattle, okay. I can kind of see where you're going with that. He talked about building resiliency and multiple capabilities within his unit for options down the road. I see it. Why you're experimenting, like if that was game 3 of that, why you are just starting or initiating that experiment against the Carolina Hurricanes is borderline malpractice. They're a juggernaut of good. And I don't, they found out a lot of things with that experiment, okay? All of which we could have told you before the game. And now you've subjected your fan base to this, you know, to this beating. Especially just a few games after we were beaten up by Minnesota. I don't know what's going on. We're all over the place. It's disconcerting. It doesn't lead me to believe. Like, this is, and it's been said many times, and I'm glad it's being said. This is a team that prior to the season talked about challenging for the Stanley Cup.
Right.
We wrote an article. We're on record as saying we didn't see any holes. Well, we did. There was a caveat. We did say we weren't too sure that Maurice was the right captain for this ship. But, you know, this group of talented players should be more consistent because they're not a bunch of young kids either.
No, we're not. They should be particularly young. I agree.
They should be more consistent and better than they've been showing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. There's always lots more to cover in terms of what we can improve on. But let's get to check-in time.
Sure.
Okay, this week, promotion to first class. Who you got?
What's wrong, Mom? First class is what's wrong, honey. It used to be a better meal. Now it's a better life.
I'm going to go Mark Scheifele.
I knew it.
He's my guy, right? And I do think, like we've spoken many times, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, we really need to get him going. He needs to find that other gear that he hadn't quite yet found this year, and we saw it. I think even in the games where we didn't play as strong, he was reasonably solid in those games. I think he's returning to the form to put him in contention for an Olympic spot. I don't think he will get that Olympic spot, but he's darn close. He's been in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think he looked more like that guy in the past six games than he has at any other time this year. So I really think we need to get him going. He had a hat trick. I think he had a total of five goals at least through those six games. So good on you. I'm putting my boy up into first class, giving him some filet mignon, some nice, you know, potatoes on the side, a good steak.
Potatoes on rotten.
Back rub. I'm rubbing his feet. No, sorry.
Let's stop there.
Yeah, stop there. I'm putting Mark Scheifele into first class. How about you?
You and I have bantered back and forth about Scheifele. Some of the goals that he scored are incredible. Like, really incredible. And it was great to see him activated in a way that I think it had just been missing, and I think the COVID hit him rather hard. And, you know, I read a lot about that in terms of it affects everybody differently, obviously, but sometimes it takes a while to get going. And so offensively, he's looked spectacular. I always take some umbrage with his defensive presence and the shift length. And I was joking with you, Vaughn, about his Buckle Up commercials, and I was going to get a t-shirt made called Buckle Up for Mediocrity.
I would not be buying that shirt.
I know you wouldn't. I'd get it for you for Christmas.
I bought Buckle Up for Greatness.
I really, when he's going, and I'm hard-pressed to think of another NHL player who is more skilled and adept at controlling the puck in tight spaces, especially in the offensive zone. His puck control and awareness is really, really elite. And the goal he scored where he with three or four fakes was just magical. So I'll give you that one. Good for you, 55.
Nice.
I'm going to go. Nice. This is a bit of a heart pick and a lifetime achievement pick. I'm going Adam Lowry. We don't talk about Adam Lowry very much at all on this podcast. He's our best penalty killer. You can put him anywhere. He's lack grit and I keep using the word jam, but we lack that up front, and he's sort of our sole presence on that. And I won't belabor it. I he's a bit of an unsung hero, and so wanted to recognize him this week.
Well, thank you for that analysis, Don Cherry.
Damn it.
No, I agree. I think he's been super consistent. He's the same guy night in and night out. I mean, like, it's kind of unfair to say his ceiling isn't super high, but he's just the same guy night in and night out. Whether we lose, whether we win, you know, 8-4 or lose 7-1, he's typically the same guy. And I know coaches love that. And it's true. Coaches do love consistency. I think he's the most consistent Jet, and he brings a good work ethic every night. So I think that's a good pick.
Okay. Penalty box.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
I'll lead us off. I'm going unconventional here, Vaughn. I'm going a bit meta. I'm going to go Jets fandom and the Jet fan experience. Let me explain.
Oh, okay.
We have, you know, we've been going to the games since they came back. And obviously, you can't maintain the same vigor from day one to day 4,000. That's just a natural evolution of getting a new hockey team and then growing old and weary while the Jets grow old and weary. But what I noticed is two things. The Leafs game was, I hadn't been to a Leafs game or a Canadiens game in a while. And the Jets fans were, in some spots, a vocal minority. Like, it was really loud for the Leafs. And the barn was, you know, 80 to 85% full. And it's just, it's lost a bit of its moxie. And I understand that. Because I'm fully guilty of that. There's a lot less yelling and screaming from our three seats than there was when we first started. So I'm part of the problem as well. I think part of that is the True North experience is that I think it's grown a little stale. And we were talking with our buddy Rich about this, and I agree with him that we kind of go through the motions. We have, you know, we play on people's vanity, and half the bits are everyone looking up at the Jumbotron, dancing Gabe, who is obviously a Winnipeg icon, but try and explain the concept of dancing Gabe to anybody outside of Winnipeg, they'll think you're a little nuts. Yeah. It's all grown a bit stale, and I think, and I understand the COVID has stunted things a little. I just, you know, bit of a prod to True North. Let's shake things up. Let's try some new things. There's lots of different ways to get fan involvement, and I think the Leafs game really hit it home, where I was like, whew, we're not the fans that we used to be, and myself included, and so had to mention it.
That is accurate, but provocative. It's a provocative pick.
And a misuse of the segment. The
people. You're going after the people.
That's what I'm here to do. I'm a real salesman, Vaughn.
Who are you? You're the Joseph Stalin of podcasts here.
Oh, Jesus.
No. You know, I will. I got to give the Jets credit. My bar for what I need is very very low, and they're now serving a brand new IPA. It's delicious. I can't remember what it's called. usually it's me just going, oh, right there, pointing at it. You're right. I mean, there's not much going on. The magic that typically filled the arena is no longer there. I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. I think, you know, COVID's taken a big hit out of everyone. It's tough to be vocal when your face is literally covered with a piece of cloth. But, you know, we do invest a lot of our time, money, and energy into being there. And, you know, it's just sort of, you know, show up. We're going to blast loud music at you so you can't even talk to the person beside you and just sit there, shut up, and watch the game. So, in terms of who I'm going to put in the penalty box, I'm going to put Logan Stanley in the penalty box.
Okay, good. He was my first choice.
Really?
Okay, yeah, I went a little unconventional. Yeah.
The whole thing against the Leafs was really kind of goofy. It kind of bugged me. I do like how much it's living rent free in Leafs fans' heads now.
It's awesome.
There's typically a lot of room up there with Leafs fans, so
tell you who that is Toronto. That is the jabroni beaten now, pie eating, trailblazing, eyebrow raising, stronger than a bear, faster than a buck, the biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
I'm not surprised that someone of that size could get into their heads.
Nice.
But I thought the whole arms up was kind of goofy, and I didn't like it. And the post-game thing, while I think his actual contribution was dumb, I think whoever, if for those who saw, I think he said, you know, after he was given the helmet for player of the game, he said, "Oh, let's go get fucked up" or something like that.
Yeah.
And but the captions down at what the Jets release said, "Let's go and have fun and be responsible" or something. So the real winner of that was whoever in the Jets media department did that, because it was a nice kind of
pretty clever.
So the Jets, you know, Twitter feed was the real winner there. And I think back to the Calgary game, and I hope I have the details right here, but I believe it was Milan Lucic who hit Dylan DeMello from behind, smashed him into the boards right in front of Logan Stanley, and that guy did nothing. Now, I know Lucic. That's right. I know it's Milan Lucic, but if you're not going to do anything, bud, why are you here? Like that's why you're here. If you're going to be big, tall, and average, listen, when your D partner gets smashed from behind, I don't care who that is. It could be Brock Lesnar for all I care.
Yeah,
if Brock Lesnar is, you got to go after him, and he didn't. So not only is he not that presence that people say he is, he did not deter Milan Lucic from doing anything. And when Milan Lucic did do something, he did nothing. Okay, and he didn't do much. He didn't deter anything on the Sunday night either. You know. So I don't know. I don't want to be anti Logan Stanley, but maybe I'm just anti the narrative that he's out. What he brings is you know, a deterrence, or he's some type of, like, I mean, you know, if we want a bad player to throw fists, we could have Nate Beaulieu out there. Like, I do think Logan Stanley is better than Nate Beaulieu, but I don't know. I don't enjoy some of the narrative around him. I don't think he's as good as many people think he is. I do think he's an NHL player. I think he's extremely limited. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to be extremely sheltered. I think Dylan DeMello does a lot to keep that guy out of trouble. And so for me, Logan Stanley, take your pillow, get to the back of the bus. You can sit beside the toilet.
Oh, nice. I do two things to add. I agree. He's, for a big guy, he's not much of a net front presence or clearing people out, or he doesn't use his frame the way you would typically want someone that size to do. And I keep mentioning stats that I'm going to look up and I never do. And so here's another one. I was looking pre-podcast here to see if I could find individually who leads the league in icing. Because in his limited minutes, I have to imagine that he is, at least percentage-wise, right up there. Because it, you know, it might be anecdotal, and it might be something that I just notice because I'm a bit of a confirmation bias. But man, oh man, he does a lot of that. He'll sit behind the net, wait, come around the net. There's you know, 2-3 good outlet passes, and he tries the Hail Mary to someone at the far blue line that's wildly off, and then we restart the play. It's just that kind of thing, or otherwise it's a flip up the boards.
Yeah,
it is.
Well, he had
frustrating, and he was exposed in Carolina, not only being on the off wing, but it was just clearly the game was too fast and too much for him. And so I don't disagree. I was higher and have been probably a little higher on him, just his future and development, but it hasn't looked good thus far this year. And to me, we are in a position where I think we have a smaller window to win now. And so I would not be at all dismayed if he got shuffled somewhere off and we try. I mean, Beaulieu, I don't think is the answer either. I know everyone's calling for Hanala, but I don't know what the answer is, but I know right now it's not him unless there's some drastic improvement.
Well, yeah, I think the answer certainly has to be you can't have Beaulieu and Stanley in your top six. It just can't happen.
No, I agree. And it's so crazy. We had so excited about our bolstered blue line, and here we are in our third episode of the year already lamenting the defense.
I love that Nate Schultz guy, though.
He is good. Very
Schmidt.
Good.
His name's Schmidt. Nate Schmidt.
Get it right, Vaughn.
Wow.
Do you want to take us through the flight plan for the coming games?
Yeah. Okay, Mike. So we're recording this on Wednesday, December 8th. So the Jets are in Seattle for their inaugural game against the Kraken tomorrow night, the 9th of December, a late start, 9 p.m. Then they're back-to-back. They're in Vancouver again. So that's interesting. It's twice this year we play Vancouver on the tail end of a back-to-back. Now, they're certainly a team that we should need to be taking. Like, that should be two wins for us. I know we'll get to that in a second. But the last time we did that, we didn't come out with any points in Vancouver. And then we have a few days off. We return to Winnipeg for a three-game homestand. We play Buffalo on the 14th, which is a Tuesday. And then Friday night against Washington, I am going to that game. Another in-person Friday night IPA eye test. In fact, we have our staff party starting at noon on the 17th. And then
should we call
ahead
to the arena?
You should call an ambulance. But not for me. So those are the next four games the Jets have. It's somewhat light. That takes us to the 19th. I think we'll get another podcast in probably till then. But in case we don't, they play St. Louis on the 19th. So those are our next five games. So a bit of a mix of cast of characters. There's three very winnable games in there and two games, two more competitive games. What do you think, Mike? How many points do you think the Jets come on? What do you think our record is after those five games? So again, quickly recap. In Seattle, in Vancouver, Buffalo at home, Washington at home, St. Louis at home.
I gotta remain optimistic. I'm gonna go 3-1-1. I think we're gonna take care of business on our West Coast trip. I am hoping or speculating that loss to Carolina. We do have one thing going for us. We have been very traditionally resilient in that we do respond well to really bad losses for the most part. And we have shown some resiliency. And I'm hoping that was a bit of a wake-up call to say we all got a little full of ourselves after the Leafs game. And I think that brought us back down to earth. So I'm hoping it's sort of a fire under their belly that might have been lacking.
Yeah, we need to, at least over the course of those five games, create a standard of play and meet that standard of play consistently through those five games. So let's set a standard. Let's play at that standard for those five games. Let's get away from playing this up-and-down hockey that we've been playing. Okay, and then let the results take care of themselves. Like I said, we played pretty well against Arizona. You know, if we get 45 shots tonight and we lose a couple of those because we get goalied, I'm fine with it. But my big concern right now is our fluctuating level of play. So that's what I'm really looking for here. I agree with you. 3-1-1, I think, is a great call. But really what I want to see is consistent, high-level play. Let the results take care of themselves. We should come out of this, just as you said, 3-1-1, 7 of possible 10 points.
Love it. All right, bud. Want to take us
out? All right. I will. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Faceoff Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple and Spotify podcast. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.